welcome to Hour 2 of Sports Saturday on KLBJ with hosts Ed and Ben Clements. They're taking calls at 512-836-0590 or toll-free at 877-590-KLBJ.
Hi again, everyone. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements, and welcome back. This is the End Zone Club on KLBJ Radio, live from Dirty Martin's Place on the Drag. Come down and watch NBA basketball, Longhorn baseball games, and a rain delay right now. Come down and see all sorts of sports. It's jam-packed tonight. Jam-packed because a lot of Longhorn fans are here who went to the football game and the baseball game. NBA fans as well here. Our show, The End Zone Club, proudly brought to you by Howard Breen and Herman Attorneys at Law, Plains Capital Bank, Sue Patrick at 5222 Burnett Road, Hokey Joe's Barbecue, S&B Amusements, and by Dirty Martin's Place. Ben, good afternoon, good evening again. Mark and Scotty sticking with us, but we watched the orange-white game today. I thought it was very, very fun. High-scoring game, 35-34. The orange defeated the white. Your impressions just right now, we'll get into it later, but your impressions of it.
Yeah, offense-heavy game. We didn't learn a lot about the defense because, like you said, a lot of points on the board, but I was really impressed with the quarterback play. Arch Manning, who everybody was so excited to see, had a stellar game, 355 yards, three touchdowns, 76% complete percentage. He looked fantastic. I thought the third-string quarterback, Trey Owens, looked amazing. This is a good offensive team that Steve Sarkisian has put together.
Trey Owens is a guy that's a true freshman, big kid from Cy-Fair down in Houston.
6'5".
Yeah. He's a guy that I think if anybody was watching this nationwide on the Longhorn Network, other coaches or other people are going to say, I may give Trey Owen a call because Trey Owen is a guy that looks like to me that could be a player next year for a lot of teams. Unfortunately for Trey, he's behind Quinn Ewers, the incumbent, and then behind Arch Manning. But I was really, really impressed with Trey Owen, but more impressed with Arch Manning. Yep. His first pass, a long touchdown pass, and then he hit his first 10. But again, as you said, 19 of 25 for 355 and three touchdowns. I love the wide receivers, especially Ryan Wingo, four receptions, 81 yards, and also the young transfer from Alabama, Isaiah Bunn. Mm-hmm. Dropped a couple of passes, but this guy's got some speed.
Yep.
He ended up with three catches for 98 yards and a touchdown.
Well, yeah, he's a guy, Pop, that Quinn Ewers, in his only two series, he targeted Isaiah Bond seven times. So we already know who he's going to have as his go-to target now that A.D. Mitchell is gone and now that he doesn't have his old guys there, Xavier Worthy. So Isaiah Bond will pick up the slack there as the go-to target. Like you said, Ryan Wingo will be a very, very good freshman receiver who I think got a lot of eyes today. But overall, Texas looked great in the offensively. They had six different running backs run the ball. C.J. Baxter looked great. Red looked fantastic. This is a team that Steve Sarkisian, his main focus was depth because we saw they had a lot of guys come in and out at offensive line, at receiver, at running back. But interesting thing I heard today was that if you go to the national championship, you'll be playing up to 16 games, so depth will be the key to any team's success. And Steve Sarkisian said that this is the deepest team he's had at his time in Texas.
One of the highlights for me was something that happened the first series when Quinn Ewers, who only played two series, Quinn Ewers had a ball batted at the line of scrimmage, and big Alfred Collins of Bastrop, who really's not played to his potential the last few years, he's played well, but he intercepted and ran it in for a touchdown. That could be, I know it's springtime, but that could be a jump start for good things for Collins. I really like the guy.
Yeah, Alfred Collins, who was the highest-rated D-lineman, even over Byron Murphy, who was going to be a first-round draft pick this next Thursday. He'll be a great replacement for a Byron Murphy as the leader of the defensive line. So I was glad that he got the jump start that he did. He had a couple tackles. Defensive backs, still a question mark, as we saw. But overall, I think this was a very good showcase. The most exciting spring game we've seen in Austin in 10 years. And for the first time in a long time, Pop, there's no QB controversy. As well as Arch played and Trey Owens played, we know who the guy is. Even though Quinn Ewers had the pick six opening drive, we know that he'll be starting week one, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Depth, depth, depth. Apparently, they can go four deep on the offensive line. which was unheard of when Steve Sarkisian got the job when Tom Herman left. So we'll talk football a little more. We've been talking golf in the first hour with the 15th club, Scotty Scheffler, the former Longhorn, two shots ahead of everybody as they enter the fourth and final round tomorrow at Harbortown at the RBC Heritage. Scotty Scheffler is on a roll. Mark Brooks, this is not the only PGA tournament going on this week. There's another tournament with the guys that are not the top 70 in the world. Talk about that tournament, and there are a couple of guys with UT ties, the Cootie brothers, very much in that tournament, and they need to be in that tournament. Explain what you're talking about.
Well, it's the Corrales Punta Cana, which is an opposite field event. Since this week is a small field, you know, signature event at Hilton Head, and these guys need the points. The money doesn't really matter. They're all going for FedEx points. Parker's tied for sixth right now, and Pearson's tied for 15th. And I mean, I'll just give you an example. Parker's 136th on the list. Pearson's 183. I know we're early in the year. However, summer will arrive very quickly. They don't get in every event from the category they play from. So when they have these chances, they really do need to, you know, finish it off and get some points on the board.
Is it sort of like relegation? If you don't have enough points, you don't play, or what is it?
Well, what happens, as we all know, the FedEx Cup basically takes over August. So they basically have through July to get their business done. And we'll just start it now. You go, well, who gets exempt? We're also used to the top 125 being the number. It's really the top 70 now. At the end of the playoffs, everybody else gets to go play a little fun 6, 7, 8 event series in the fall to actually determine that top 125. So you're not done if you're not in the top 125 at that point. But, you know, as long as you're in the top 200, you're going to get to go play that little series at the end, which is really no fun. You'd like to have it wrapped up. But this is a good chance for both these kids to get some much-needed points on the board, get some confidence. As you know, they're going to play as partners next week at New Orleans, which I think is very cool.
I didn't know that.
And that's official points. New Orleans is a team event. You get everything except the Masters win. You don't get the invitation.
What tournament is that?
That's the Zurich.
Zurich Classic at New Orleans. Okay. Yeah. And then after that, it's Dallas, their home field, and then they get probably take the week off of the PGA, and then Colonial. And hopefully Colonial gets both those boys in.
They can get sponsor exemptions, correct?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I would certainly expect that they would. So they're in a good stretch right now. I'd just like to see them get going.
You mentioned Dallas. I don't think it's brought up enough that Dallas right now is home of some of the best golfers in the world. I mean, including the Cootie brothers, but then you got Scotty Scheffler, number one. You got Will Zalatoris. You got Jordan Spieth. Dallas is kind of becoming a hub for golf.
It has been. There's always been a pretty good group of guys.
And even Dallas-Fort Worth area, because you and Hogan.
More Dallas guys.
There's
a little more nightlife in Dallas. So that age group tends to wander over there at near Greenville Avenue and hang out. So Dallas, right now, you'd have Dallas-Fort Worth area. Obviously, South Florida.
Yeah.
And a bunch of those guys ended up down there in the southeast part of Florida. And still Scottsdale.
Yeah,
Phoenix, Scottsdale area. Those are probably your three big hubs right now.
But, I mean, since 2015, the Dallas area has one-third of the Masters champions. Yeah, Jordan one, Scotty two.
That's true.
So they got a third of the champions in 9 years.
Lots of green jackets.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Were you surprised when we saw Scotty win? And, you know, the big thing, I know CBS made a big deal. Oh, he's going home. I want to go home to see his wife who's pregnant. And we saw the pictures from the Inwood bar after he got home, and come to find out she picked him up and went with him to the bar, Randy Smith and Blake Smith, and they had a drink and went home. I think some people were taken aback by that.
I bet she didn't have a drink. She's about to have another child.
Scotty said she had a Heineken Zero, a non-alcoholic.
That's what I thought. I said last week we were watching. There's not a chance in H that he's withdrawing from the Masters on the back nine with a lead or close to the lead. No way.
Yeah.
No one was going to make that call. Even she wouldn't have made the call. And I don't know. Maybe she's not as close as we thought.
How is this going to affect him with the PGA Championship? Because she's due in 9 days. And as you said, you got the Zurich, and he won't play in the Zurich, to my knowledge. And then
he can play in Dallas because he's only a car ride away from the hospital there. I don't know if he's committed. I suspect he'll play.
Yeah.
You know, those guys have been good to him, I'm sure, over the years. I know they have. So he'll probably play Dallas and then the PGA, and my guess is we may not see him in Fort Worth.
A lot of people have said this to me. How they've asked me, and I don't know the answer. You were a player. You and Cynthia had kids. Did your game change after the arrival of children?
My life changed. I got married pretty young, and I had my first child probably a couple years. I hadn't been out there more than 2 years, so I didn't really know the tour for a long time without having children. And so, I played better after because I didn't know how to play when I got out there. That's for sure.
Well, I mean, we talked with Julie Crenshaw about this last weekend when it came up, and she says Ben played better after Catherine was born, their firstborn. So you never know. I mean, you know, it's a lot different traveling with all the car seats and all the stuff you have to travel with. It's a little more trouble.
Some people play better with a different type of distraction. When they don't have children or family or something else going on in their life, golf becomes all-consuming. It's very easy. They live, breathe, eat, everything, you know, every waking moment, including their dreams, is about golf. And that's not always a healthy thing for a lot of people. So it's really, you know, a lot of people, it's a nice distraction, actually.
PGA Tour did a video, or it might have been Masters, of Tony Finau last week traveling to the Masters. He has an entourage. He's got all those kids. They got a big, big jet. They had a big house. And it really looked like fun. But they've got a very, very close family with a lot of kids.
I know it's fun.
That poor SOB is not making any money on the tour because he's spending it all to get all his family to each tournament, a big house, a big everything. He can't be making money.
He's making big money.
He's got 34 kids. There's no way.
He's got equipment. He's got endorsement.
Four or five
kids.
Yeah.
Potatoes.
Starting five.
Starting five.
Hey,
we got to take a break. This is the End Zone Club live from Dirty Martin's Place. Ed and Ben with Scotty and Mark. The great Bo Bernstein is also here today. Bo's here. One of the top young quarterbacks in all of Austin. Yeah, Ben.
Nothing. When we come back, I want to ask you guys about something that's come up. It's called the Top of the Mountain Syndrome. With Scotty Scheffler. I want to get y'all's opinion on this when we come back. This is the End Zone Club on News Radio KLBJ, live from Dirty Martin's Place, back after these messages.
Hey, we're back on the End Zone Club. Ed Clements, Ben Clements, Scotty Sayers, and Mark Brooks. We are back on the air from Dirty's as we talk golf and football and the like. Ben, you were talking about something called the what syndrome?
It's called Top of the Mountain Syndrome, which I've been seeing a lot about, and I witnessed it on the social media over the course of the Masters. Top of the Mountain Syndrome, what I've noticed is that Scottie Scheffler has found himself the top of the line. He's on the top of the mountain. He's winning everything. He's the clear number one. At what point do we think it could affect him? And at what point is he going to find himself being rooted against? Because as we've seen forever. We saw it with the Bulls. We saw it with the Warriors. We've seen it with the Chiefs right now. When you get to a point where you're just winning and you're expected to win, people are going to root against you because you're sick of seeing the same person winning. Do you think this is going to affect Scottie Scheffler at all?
Let me jump in. I don't think he's got the personality that I don't think anybody is going to be pulling against him because I think he's the type of guy that you want to pull for. And if he had any kind of skeletons in his closet, if he had any mannerisms, and I'm thinking immediately of Patrick Reed, I'm thinking about people scowling on the golf course or complaining on the golf course, da-da-da-da-da. I just don't think it's going to be a bad situation for him, Ben.
I just say that because for the first time this past Masters, I saw people not rooting against him, but having stuff saying like, nobody, who's going to be there to stop him? You know, the only person that could stop Scotty Scheffler is in a womb right now.
The baby.
The baby.
Yeah.
So it's just the top of the mountain syndrome. You get to a point where on the climb, people root for you. You want to see the underdog get there. But once you get there, you're enemy number one. You got to get brought down.
You don't have to get brought down. You know, is he an enemy? I just don't see the guys that be an enemy.
I may not see it quite as much the I get you with the top of the mountain syndrome. I view it more as he gets to the top and the air gets pretty thin up there, and all of a sudden you start reading your press a little bit. I think that's a bigger danger, is that, you know, you ends up putting a lot of pressure on himself because he now has the opportunity to do things pretty much nobody else right now can do.
When you get compared to Tiger Woods,
it's a problem.
That's a problem.
Well, nobody's come close yet. I mean, they've thrown that. They did it with Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah.
You know, Hal Sutton had it. You know, he got the label really quick. Back, you know, he won a PGA early in his career. And
Jordan Spieth had it. In 2015, he was compared to Tiger Woods.
Ben Crenshaw had it.
Sure.
I don't think in Scotty's case people are rooting against him or will root against him, but what people want is something that's competitive. Yeah. They don't want a guy that's running away with a tournament by five or six strokes because that's not very interesting. Hence what we saw with the Masters ratings last week dropping in the last couple hours.
And we actually looked it up. I mean, the facts are he has not had a Tiger-esque, from a win standpoint, he's not had a Tiger-esque run the last few years. He doesn't have like 20 wins in the last 3 years. He's got 9 total wins. He's going for win number 10, which is a phenomenal achievement, plus the two Masters. That's what kind of takes him over the top. But he hasn't had, he hadn't won, you know, he won 4 tournaments, 2 tournaments, and now he's going for, you know, number 3 or 4 this year.
Yep.
So he's off to that start.
Yep.
I'd love to see him sustain it.
I would too.
And gain some haters. Go for it.
Yeah.
This is the time, though, I think, when he's won 3 already this year. He's on the precipice of winning tomorrow. He'll be the favorite in the PGA, the British Open.
Yeah.
He'll be, you know, looking at all these titles. What happens if suddenly Scotty doesn't win tomorrow, doesn't compete in the PGA, doesn't do much in the – is he going to go like, uh-oh, is it going to be what have you done with me lately syndrome? Or?
Well, it's going to show up in the putter, in my opinion. I mean, he hits the ball so – you know, he hits it great. He's a great athlete. He's proven that. Phenomenal, you know, as Randy Smith said many times, great – he's got great, in my opinion, he's got great face awareness. He knows where that club face is pretty much at all times. I don't care if he's falling down. He knows where that face is. The putter's where it shows up, and that's what showed up last year. And that's where, you know, a lot of people, it shows up, the pressure. Even though he may not show it outwardly, he starts missing a bunch of putts, and then it gets a little tougher.
And, I don't mean to disparage Scotty at all, because I'm all 4 of us, we're huge Scotty guys. We're Texas guys here, but... you know, it's a matter of fact. You can get to a point where you're so good that it starts getting boring. And I wonder if that was Scotty, if it's going to start to weigh on him. Because, right, we've seen past 3 weeks in Vegas, his odds are astronomically low, where he's expected to win.
All right, I'll give you a little insight. The great ones, whether it's Kobe or Tiger or, you know, I'll just stop with those two.
Yep.
When they do achieve, they win. They win a championship. It's next challenge up.
Yeah.
Okay, they just move right on to the next challenge. They briefly celebrate what they just did.
Yeah.
Briefly. And they're on to the next challenge.
And when I say boring, you're so good it's boring, I mean for the fans. I'm a fan of golf. You lived it. I'm a fan. And, like, you know, when the Warriors went on their run, it got boring. It got boring.
Hit the buzzer here.
The Chiefs, I'm sick of seeing the Chiefs win.
Stop.
And they're a likable team.
They do it for themselves, mainly.
Yeah.
Okay? Mainly. It's from deep inside. They do it for themselves. The fans get to enjoy their greatness.
Yeah.
That's how they do it. They stay in the process.
With this comes a lot of pressure, like you said. It's a hell of a lot of pressure.
We talk about a guy who's, I don't know how much pressure, but he won 3 majors very, very quickly, and he missed a cut last week at the Masters, and he's sort of the forgotten longhorn with Scottie Scheffler dominating. I'm talking about Jordan Spieth.
He could have lost process a little bit, and family, and life, things happen. But he definitely lost some golf. He lost some momentum, no doubt.
He's got 2 kids now.
You're talking about Jordan Spieth, though.
I'm talking about Jordan,
I know.
A couple of kids, a lot of money.
Another guy that at one point was compared to Tiger Woods. When 2015, people thought he's the next great. And do we say it kind of it got to him, Scotty? I don't know. Did it get to him, or is it just his natural game?
I don't think his game was ever as solid as what Scotty's is now. Now, Jordan, you know, he won a bunch of majors, no doubt. But he would, you know, he'd have a good tournament and then a couple of bad ones. And because he drove the ball all over the place, let's face it. Scotty's game is so sharp now, all the way down the line, it just doesn't have enough weakness for him to go south too far.
I think that's fair. I think it's very fair to say Scotty's kept his iron game and driving game in line. Jordan would have phenomenal driving, have good driving stretches. Maybe his irons weren't quite there. Then he had phenomenal iron years. I mean, basically led the tour in proximity from driving it all over the map, but it's different. I mean, I'm going to go back to the Tiger Woods, as far as golf's concerned, he set the bar for these guys so high. I mean, I don't think, honestly, these guys are not dumb.
Yeah.
They don't use Tiger's bar as the bar. Okay, they set their own bar, whether it's four wins, five majors, some number. You know, first thing you're going to go for is what Justin Thomas is searching. You know, they're all looking for the four. Jordan's in the same boat. They yeah. all want that career grand slam, and so all of a sudden, that tournament's got a circle around it. And yes, they self-impose. Arnold Palmer never got it. Tom Watson never got it. It's very interesting, the pressure that, you know, they goofy little goals.
Yeah. We got to take it. Rory.
Yeah.
Great example.
Rory. There's no better example than Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, the Masters. Yeah. Never won a Masters.
Ooh, Arnold. That one's a good
Arnold and the PGA.
Ooh. Phil Mickelson, U.S. Open.
There you go.
Oh, all right. When we return, more on the 15th Club Live from Dirty Martin Place, where it's rocking tonight. Longhorn baseball team in action. The football team in good shape. Orange-white today. We'll have more from the End Zone Club live from Dirty's after the news on News Radio 590 KLBJ. Welcome back to the End Zone Club live from Dirty Martin's Place. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements, Scotty Sayers, and Mark Brooks. Our show proudly brought to you by Howery Breen and Herman, attorneys at law, Plains Capital Bank, Sue Patrick, 5222 Burnett Road, S&B Amusements, Hokie Joe's Barbecue, and, of course, by Dirty Martin's Place. We watched the orange-white game today. Orange over the white, 35-34. Only a couple of series for Quinn Ewers. Arch Manning, brilliant today, 19 of 25 for 355. Trey Owen opened some eyes, too. He's the young freshman, 14 of 21 for 228 and three touchdowns. C.J. Baxter, Jaden Blue, and Javion Red ran the ball well. Ryan Wingo, Isaiah Bond led the receivers, and also Alfred Collins had a touchdown for the Longhorn defense.
Okay, Pop, we're here with you and I. We got Scotty and Mark with us. Mark, PGA champion, 96. They'll be playing the PGA championship at Valspar on May
8th. Where?
It's not Valspar. What was it? Valhalla.
Valhalla, good.
I know Valhalla. It used to be a Halo, a little video game, had a series there.
Okay.
Weirdly. It's actually on my wedding date, too. Did you know that, Mark?
I did not know
that. Yeah, it's on my wedding date.
May 18th is a Saturday before.
Yeah. Scotty hasn't broken that news to you yet. Oh, boy.
We're going to be live from the wedding, I guess, because Mark's going to be in the... we got to work on that.
I know. That's why I'm getting married early, so we can have the show live from the wedding.
Okay, great.
Beautiful. Good. That'd be great. And our tuxedos will be at somewhere in Buda.
I want to keep this golf conversation going, though. We've been talking about Scotty Scheffler and our so-called top-of-the-mountain syndrome. But somebody that suffered that for 10 years has been looking for a major, Rory McIlroy. Every week, it seems like, he's at the top of the leaderboard. But when it comes to a major, all the talk, all the expectations, even in Vegas, all the odds, but he can't seem to get past that finish line. For example, today, he had six eagle putts today. He played those at even par.
Six eagle putts?
Six eagle putts. He played those at even par. I don't know what it is, and maybe you guys can enlighten me why Rory seemed to have plateaued over the last decade on majors. Looking for the career grand slam, but he cannot find it at the Masters.
Well, I mean, I think you start with his putting if there's a weakness in his game. If he had six eagle putts, how many birdies out of those did he make? Did he three-putt a bunch of them?
He must have.
Man,
must
I'm going to check your stats. He drove three greens?
Yep.
Par fours? There's only three fives on that track.
Again, it's Twitter, but this is a Twitter account with a lot of followers.
Well, let's just say he had several eagle opportunities. Now, he could have had six for the week.
Mm-hmm.
But if he three-putted six times, I'm going to call bunk on
I'll
your,
double check.
Your stat
either,
boys
either,
there.
Either way, that's against the point here.
Self-imposed pressure.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah.
That's my take.
And he's been embroiled in this LIV PGA Tour. He was the face
of the PGA Tour last year.
I know, Ed, but that doesn't explain the eight previous years. He's 10 years full.
Point.
He's 10 years in.
Yeah,
without a major.
That's a good point.
But I think he's the proverbial top of the mountain syndrome a little bit when it comes to the majors.
By the way, okay, yeah, past two days, six eagle opportunities, playing him at par. But still.
That's gross.
Yeah. Still.
That's why he's six back.
Yeah. Do you think that
chasing Scotty.
At one point, Rory was going to, he was on track to being one of the greatest golfers who ever lived. There was a point in his career, maybe one of the best European, not the best, but one of the best. Is he still in that conversation?
He's among the best in the history of the game. I'll give him that. Do you give him that, Mark?
Sure I do.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, he's going to make somebody's list.
Yeah.
He'll make my list. I don't know how deep I'm going to go. He doesn't have, you know, he's not Gary Player, Tom Watson. He's not in that category yet. Mm-hmm. Not my book. Phenomenal player. I mean, he's played great. But, I mean, you can't go 10 years in your prime and not get one. When that's what you've been talking about,
yeah.
That's your goal.
And you're right, he is in his prime. He's in his 30s now.
He is in the prime. He's probably still got a good 5 years left. So,
yeah.
I mean, he could easily win, you know, four or five more. But he's probably likely to win one when he feels like he's about done, you know, and whatever. And he's going out there and win. He might go out there and win by five.
How old were you when you won the PGA?
Probably 35-ish.
35?
Yeah, uh-huh. Roughly.
And you competed a lot in the majors. You came really close.
Not a bunch.
But you did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have great results, but I kind of had a knack for if I got in there, I might hang in for the whole week.
Scotty, what do you think it is that
feast or famine
that haunts Rory at the Masters? Because it seems like on paper it would fit his game. It's a long balls, you know, companion. Yeah, the putting, you know, you have to be accurate, but you don't have to be the best putter in the world to win there. What is it about the Masters that, you know, kicks him up?
Well, I still, everything that I see in Rory coming close but not finishing goes back to putting. He's a phenomenal driver of the ball. Mm-hmm. His iron play is good. His wedge game is kind of, you know, what do you say, above average, but not.
It's above average. It's definitely not, it's not elite, about, yeah. You know, by tour standards, which is kind of crazy, yeah. But it's not elite by tour standards.
Yeah.
Not the last few years, that's
well,
for sure.
Well, go back to St. Andrews. Last day. Leading the tournament going in, everybody's favorite. Mm-hmm. He hits every green in regulation, shoots two under par. Cam Smith laps him by having a really great putting day.
He did.
But Rory had a very, very average, I think he two-putted everything.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So last year at the U.S. Open, Wyndham Clark wins. Rory won back. You know, didn't get the putts in the hole at the right time.
And sometimes it just doesn't work out. I mean, you know, we'll... Not to bring the live subject. I'm not even bringing it in. Just Greg Norman had a bunch of close misses.
Yeah,
sure did.
You know, several that. I mean, he could easily have five or six majors, and you could arguably, and probably accurately say he got a couple stolen from him.
Oh, Bob Tway, Larry Mize.
There's two.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I'll bring up live. John Rahm said this week he wasn't treated very friendly by some people at Augusta National. Some of his friends welcomed him. Some didn't. What kind of vibe did you two guys see when you both were at Augusta last week?
I'll take that comment solely to mean competitors. I will assure you no one involved with that tournament from the committee to members treated him in any way not welcoming. I'll promise you that.
Yeah, our friend Ben Crenshaw said he was very gracious and spoke beautifully at the Champions Dinner. Now, at the end of the week, at the green jacket presentation, there were some people that said he was a little dour and not, you know, not handing off the green jacket. He just didn't seem very excited to even be there, to have to be there on Sunday.
I've got an opinion about that. I think he misses the PGA Tour. He misses the competition. He doesn't like that candy-ass shotgun start. I don't think he likes that. He doesn't like all the loud music. We've seen that before when he shushed people. I think he took the money, which is great money, man. He's a grown-up. He took the money. But I think this is just me. I think he's thinking, man, this is not all what I think it was going to be.
I wouldn't argue with it. In fact, he misses the show.
Yeah.
It's just not the show. You know, when you get... You know, it's not off Broadway. I mean, when he's been playing, you know, right there on 42nd Street, Main Street, And then he runs over there, and as we all know, I don't care how much they hype it. Now, I will give them Australia. They have a lot of people there. But generally speaking, their tournaments are only showing, a few thousand people are showing up. I mean, he could get that at a club. We just tweeted out he's going to go play 18 at Austin Country Club, and we'll let everybody in. There'd be thousands of people out there to watch him.
I wouldn't be shocked if John Rahm. We heard it this past week that he is in favor and pushing for a 72-hole, tournament for the LIV. But I think I'm under the impression that he might have joined LIV with the pretense that they were going to merge with the PGA imminently, and so maybe he's wondering, hey, what the hell's going on here? I thought we were merging ASAP. I might be stuck with these guys for the foreseeable future.
They still may do something together. That's not done. Let's get that, first of all, get that on the table. But even if they make a deal, if LIV survives, they're still not going to have 40 or 50,000 people out watching them play. So what it does, it's energy.
Yeah.
And he feeds off that. And when he shows up and there's, 1,000 people on the property, and there's, some 80s rock band playing in the background that no one's ever heard of, that's a problem. He's having a problem with that.
Did y'all see this rumor? I texted Dad about it early in the week, before the Masters, that there was this rumor going around that Rory was going to sign with the LIV. Did y'all see this?
It was total rumor.
It was all rumors.
Garbage.
But the rumor was $850 million. And you think of that, and you're like, oh my gosh. But I think Rory could get something around that ballpark. And with him kind of struggling, I'd say, recently, why would you not take it? Mark, I know that, your opinion is these guys, they're making their money and good on them. But if you're Rory and you can get somewhere in that ballpark, why would you not take it at this point?
He's getting plenty of money from other sources.
Yeah.
They're about to distribute some equity in this new for-profit entity at the PGA Tour. Maybe he's just going to wait and see what his offer is.
Yeah.
His equity position.
Scotty, if you're his manager, do you say take that?
Boy.
$850 million? Scotty, take it in a heartbeat.
The taxes over there in the U.K. are very high. Or does he pay U.S. taxes?
He's Florida resident.
You can send that to the Cayman Islands. You can have a little account down there, Scotty.
Okay.
Hey, 2% would be a good deal.
Oh,
it depends on if Roy wants to make, I don't know how much history he wants to still try to make.
He's hadn't made history in 10 years, but
It came out to be false, but I just want to know how credible those rumors might have been.
Greg Norman waved it off early.
Greg Norman was at
the Masters, and he waved it off. He said, he even denied that.
Okay, we got to take a break. After this break, more from Dirty Martin's Place. This is the End Zone Club on KLBJ Radio. Live from Dirty's, your place for basketball tonight. Longhorns, I guess, are still in that rain today, but rain delay because it's been raining here at Dirty Martin's Place. When we come back, more with Mark Brooks, Scotty Sayers, I'm Ed Clements, along with Ben Clements, back right after this timeout. Welcome back to the End Zone Club, our show proudly brought to you by Plains Capital Bank, Howery, Breen, and Harmon Attorneys at Law, Sue Patrick at 5222 Burnett Road, Pokey Joe's Barbecue, S&B Amusements, and by Dirty Martin's Place. Ed and Ben and Scotty and Mark Brooks, we can tell you the Longhorn baseball game has been resumed at Dish Falk Field. Texas leads 7-0. Longhorns lost the first game last night. They'll play tomorrow. A hully gully season so far, Ben Clements, for the Texas Longhorn baseball team.
Yeah, Pop, real disappointing after last season, making it to the College World Series. It's a lot of talk about David Pierce being the pitching coach. A lot of calls for him to resign as the pitching coach.
He should.
And relinquish his duties elsewhere. But all around, this is one of the more disappointing years we've seen in Texas baseball in better half of a decade.
What's disappointing? They're winning like two or three of the series, but they're getting beat by Texas A&M Corpus Christi. And this week, the most embarrassing loss in 30 years, they lose to University of Texas Rio Grande Valley.
I think they've lost two of three to Texas State this year. And don't get me wrong, Texas State has got a great ball club this year, but it's Texas.
Yeah.
You are the Longhorns.
Yeah, and that's a frustrating thing with a lot of people. Now, we talked about the orange-white game. Orange defeated the white 35-34. Next time we see the Longhorns.
Go ahead.
What'd you say?
133 days.
133 days. August 31st, Texas hosting Colorado State.
Yeah.
Don't know the kickoff time of that game, but we did learn the kickoff time for Texas at Michigan, week number two, and it's an 11 a.m. game from Ann Arbor. Thoughts on that?
It's the Fox noon kickoff, as we always see. It's unfortunate because, as we all expect, it will be a primetime game. It'll be the defending champions versus, at that point, a probably top five Texas team, one of the favorites to win the national championship. So I think most of the country agrees with us here. This should be a 7 o'clock kickoff. But I think it fares well for the Longhorns playing an early game. We know how tough it is to play at night on the road. We think about those games in Stillwater at Oklahoma State. Those games were really tough. You know, if Texas OU was at night and OU was one of the top in the country, it'd be a damn tough game. But it fares well for Sarkisian to have the early morning game. For the fans, though, not so much fun.
Yeah, that's I know a lot of people have to stay in Detroit and drive. That's going to be a traffic nightmare.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I like an 11 o'clock game will probably bode well for Texas. Plus, another thing that's going to bode well for Texas, Texas has a quarterback that's been there 3 years, Quinn Ewers. Michigan, I believe, had their spring game today. Mm-hmm. They don't know who their quarterback is. They've got a brand-new coach. So I see this game much like last year's Texas-Alabama game.
And you got a quarterback who kind of knows the rivalry. He only played at Ohio State for 1 year, but he knows the atmosphere. So that's also going to fare well for Sarkisian and Longhorns. Again, though, 11 o'clock, not fun. It should be a primetime game.
Yeah.
Not great.
Well, I remember that when Texas beat Ohio State in Columbus, that was a night game, and that was just an unbelievable atmosphere.
Yeah.
When the Longhorns won that day. But it'll still be good, but it to me, it loses a bit of its luster being that early game. Mark, your thoughts?
I agree completely. Kind of messes up our golf day, too. Because you know we're going to watch the football game.
Yeah.
Not streaming.
Yeah,
no, we'll be network.
The ratings will be going down.
We'll be network on that one.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I feel like at this point, the NCAA, they need to have a... Is it the NCAA that's...
Whomever runs the football now,
they
don't
need
know.
To know that. These primetime games, these premium games, need to have a 7 o'clock time. Look at the Alabama-Texas game.
Yeah.
7:30 kickoff. That game was the highest rated game of the season before Michigan-Ohio State. Second most all year long.
But if you're a Fox executive, you're saying, hey, I'm paid all this money to get this game. I want it when I damn well want the game. Now, one more thing about college football.
You're right.
A new rule change they voted on this week. Just like the NFL, the quarterback can have a receiver in his a speaker in his helmet.
One player.
One player.
It can be anybody on the team, but one player per team.
One player on offense, one player on defense.
Yeah.
So it'll be the quarterback and probably the middle linebacker, some linebacker. I think it's a great move because it's gotten to the silly point, and with the Michigan scandal of stealing signs, this is a great technology, I think.
Yeah, we're getting closer and closer to NFL football now. The quarterback. I wonder, though, when does it begin and when does it end? Because I don't know if the NFL can a quarterback coach or whoever's talking to him tell him, hey, throw to the X.
I can answer that question. When 15 seconds before the play clock ends, that cuts off immediately, where a coach can't say, you know, Ben's open, throw it to Mark. Scotty's gone long. You can't do that. 15 seconds and boom, it goes off.
Well, I like it. We'll now be at an end to the cards that we'll see on the sideline, relaying the plays, no more of the hand signals. It'll speed up the game. We're getting closer to the NFL football. I mean, these guys are getting paid the same as NFL practically. You might as well make it the same thing. But with that, another change happens this week that they're voted on. They're now implementing a two-minute, warning.
Yeah, two-minute timeout.
Two-minute timeout. So
just like the NFL.
So that's another rule change. Again, NCAA football is becoming NFL football very, very swiftly. I like this rule, too, because the point was to allow coaches to systematically and strategically place their timeout. So I like this rule change.
Yeah, another thing happened this week. FedEx in Memphis is giving $25 million to Memphis, $5 million a year for the next 5 years, and it's solely to get players in football and basketball. $5 million from FedEx from Memphis. I hate this.
Paging Michael Dell, paging Tito Beveridge.
So, a corporation, stockholders, shareholders. If I'm a stockholder at FedEx, I'm going, wait a minute.
What are we doing?
How about a little dividend here? Don't give to get a wide receiver over there from Memphis. Thoughts on that, guys?
You don't think that the Texas alums have a corporation behind them that are giving money?
I don't know of any that have announced like a
they may not be
Chevron,
that
a Shell, a Tito's, a Dell,
yeah.
You know, Core Crenshaw, you know, that sort of stuff. 803 Golf. I've not heard
easy,
that.
Easy, easy.
Yeah. But this was just shocking to me that.
And this is the future.
Yeah.
This is the future.
Yeah.
If you are in a, if your school's in a town of a big corporation, you better make some phone calls. Imagine what Phil Knight and Nike is giving Oregon. Because we
every
don't
year.
Know right now.
And
yeah.
But they have been as well.
Yeah.
And today's football game was sponsored by Texas One,
yeah.
which is the fundraising
collective.
Arm.
The collective. Yeah.
So they. Just
what does the collective do?
The collective
collects lots of money.
Lots of money.
and
they meet with the coaches.
And they distribute.
And they say, what do you need? Who do you need? How much do you need?
I have a question on the communication, the helmet.
Yeah.
Quickly,
okay.
40 seconds left.
Will it get rid of the homecoming
yes.
signs
yes.
that they raise
it
on the sideline?
It will.
Get rid of them.
It will, because there's
okay.
no need. There's
sick of that.
There's no need for any kind of, you know.
Blocks the 50-yard yeah. line seat view. Too.
I think this is the best rule change they can have.
Thank you.
Okay,
that's
we got to go. Thanks to Mark. Thanks to me. Appreciate it. Scotty, thanks for hanging out. Ben, thanks so much. Thanks to Daniel and Jake and everybody here at Dirty Mountains. A record day for Dirties. And thank you, Kyle, back of the stadium and the studio. We will be back next week. This has been Sports Saturday on KOBJ.